If you like the Creative South podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South podcast swag. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, a shout out on the podcast thanking you for your support, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Welcome to the Creative South podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I'm talking with illustrator Brad Woodard. Brad and I chat about the interesting way he turned a college internship into a full-time job, how getting on board with Skillshare early on helped boost his career and led him to deciding to go out on his own and start Brave the Woods, the mission of Artists for Education, and so much more, all right after this. I talk about Jack Prince on the podcast all the time, and today isn't any different, except that I want to talk about how much we rely on them at Creative South. Not only has Jack Prince been a longtime sponsor of Creative South and the podcast, but they help us with so many cool things every year. Whether they are making our pop-up displays and tablecloths, or printing our notebooks, Jack Prince is always there when we need them. They even printed my Creative South podcast stickers that have a coupon code on the back that gives you a great discount on all of their products. Speaking of stickers, Jack Prince will print any kind, shape, size, stock, including full-color stickers with full-color liner prints for you to use as product labels, promotions, bumper stickers, hang tags, business cards, and more. Right now, you can get 500 3x3-inch die-cut stickers starting at $149 when you visit jackprince.com. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code PrinceSouth18 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. Brad, thanks for joining me this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in Seattle, Washington, up in the mountains, and yeah, that's where I'm from. I mean, we moved around a lot since then, but I'm from Seattle.
Okay. When you were growing up, what were you into?
I was, same things I kind of am now, I was into art, sports, and I love the outdoors. So I did a lot of backpacking, and we'd like to do kayaking and all sorts of fun stuff like that. But yeah, my mom was an artist, I got influenced real early on with that. So
you didn't have the parents telling you should go in to do something else other than art.
No, luckily I didn't have to go through that. I didn't have to have that that issue at all.
Good. Good. When you got to high school and all, did you start taking like more formal art classes in school?
Yeah, I did. When I got into high school, I started taking like those AP classes for mm-hmm. art and started, you know, building up your portfolio, which I look back now just recently to over the Thanksgiving break and at my parents' house.
How bad was it?
Man, oh, it was pretty bad. I was looking, I was like, I don't know how anyone ever thought that I was going to make any money off of it. And that's probably still what I'm sure that's what my parents thought at that time. But I look back and I was like, man, there was nothing really creative or inventive at all in here.
We just cleaned out our closets. My wife, we decided to turn a closet in our spare bedroom into kind of a mini office for her. But to do that, we had to get rid of all of the like art stuff that we've been hoarding that will never get used. Like, why do I have three things of Sculpey?
Exactly.
Hate sculpture. I mean, it's not me. But so we had to get through all that stuff. So when we were doing that, I went through and I found my portfolio from college.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. It was so bad.
How's that?
It was like I'm looking through all of it and I'm just like cringing at everything. And then, you know, through the entire thing, and there's probably like 50, 60 pieces of stuff, because it was not just stuff that went into like my portfolio. It was like stuff that was left over from each end of class and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Through all of it, there was one logo that I was like, that would still hold up. All the rest of the stuff, I was like,
oh God, I am so lucky I got a job when I got out of college. Right? This is horrible.
Well, it says a lot about the process, right? Yeah. Like, there are those prodigies that just come out and they're just amazing. And I knew them. I knew which ones were.
Yeah.
And they're doing awesome things. But man, and probably like yourself, like I had to work for it because mm-hmm. I thought I knew, you know, what I was getting into, and I thought I had a leg up on everybody. And it's different when you get moved into different pockets of people, right? Like once you're in high school, it's a much smaller group to pull sure. from. So you're like, yeah, I'm totally better than these people. Then you get to college and it was completely different. I thought I was going to be a fine artist. So I went into, cause I like to paint mm-hmm. and all that. And so when I got into college, I was just eye-opening experience for sure, where I was like, man, I don't even think I should just do this as a hobby anymore. People are way better than I am. I am completely down the wrong career path, got really nervous about my future. And that's when I found, is actually a drawing teacher of all people called me out because I drew this thing and I thought I did an awesome job on it. And it was supposed to be like a life, like a still life mm-hmm. pen and ink. And I did all these details, made it look like the most beautiful pineapple and watermelon you ever saw. And then he came back and he like critiqued us, and I'd never been critiqued either, you know, like publicly,
sure,
which was what did in college. And so I wish they'd done that earlier, but so I got up there and he was like, no, there's like, he's like, what is this on? Like, it's just these two pieces of fruit are just floating and there's no rhyme or reason why they're here. What? And like, you know, arranged in this space for what reason? It just looks all over the place. And I had no idea what he was talking about because I'd never learned, you know, all the design principles. Sure. And he's the one that actually pushed me in. He's like, you know, there should be balance. There should be like some sort of like ground for it to sit on. There should be perspective. Anyway, he put me in touch with their graphic design department and said, hey, you should try taking classes here. And that's how I got introduced to graphic design, is because my art teacher was like, you should probably check this out. Learn some things before you come back.
Hey, I don't think you're going to make it in this whole drawing, painting world. Maybe go right? play on the computer for a little while. One of those.
And you know, it helped. Yeah, no, that's exactly what he said. So I took a color, like an art and color theory class and design, like a design 101. And but it's funny, the joke's on him now because I mostly do illustration now. So
take that. That kind of came back.
I can draw.
Yeah, I had a drawing teacher, and you know, I'm not good at speed drawing. Like like figure drawing classes, I was always screwed because I'm not yep. good at that. I need to take my time and move in the process.
Sure. Yeah.
But my figure drawing teacher was this ancient Japanese woman who was always very angry and would just be like, who taught you how to draw? And I always have to respond to her of, you did. I had to take two classes under you to get to this one.
You don't remember me?
And she didn't. She never remembered anyone. Like, you would go in and, hey, Sumi, how are you? And she'd just look at you like, how do you know what my first name is?
I am your mentor, not your friend.
But it was this. She was so confused that you knew who she was. I mean,
how could you possibly know me?
Yeah. I've never seen you before in my life. I was like, I've been studying under you for 3 years now. You see me every day for 3 years. And she wouldn't know anybody. She was hilarious. But she was definitely one who pushed me into going into graphic design more heavily too, because you know, yep. when I got back into college, I really thought that I would be, well, maybe I'll do some fine art, I'll do some painting, and quickly realized that I was not that good at painting and wasn't.
Yeah, I see. I find if you're in that kind of, you know, I'm not really sure if I'm going to do it. Like, if you're not 100% in, I feel like there's a big problem already, yeah. because the people who are choosing to be fine artists, you really have to be 100% in.
Oh, yeah.
To make it, you know, a life out of it at all, you know, and to really like get good at it, because it's intense.
And you're never going to make a living.
I know. Yeah, exactly. I realized it was a passion of mine to do it. But the process that I went through to make and create needed to be adjusted a little bit.
Sure.
And so graphic design is, and like I said, like I'm mostly an illustrator now. I still do like branding projects and things with my design work. But yeah, the illustration was heavily influenced by my design. So that really boosted my ability to create, was having those, knowing those principles. So I don't think I'd really have done much if I didn't take any of those design classes. Gotcha.
So when you were taking those design classes, and when you kind of finally decided I'm not going to be a fine arts major so much anymore, did you start focusing on illustration in the process, or were you focusing on just general graphic design?
No, I actually didn't even think about illustration as an option. I thought it was a fun hobby. It was interesting because I took one illustration class. I mean, I took like you said, figure drawing, all those were just like your kind of your core art classes that I took in art school. But yeah, illustration, I only took one digital illustration class. And ooh, it was the last semester. It was my last semester. I thought it would just be fun. I was like, oh, sweet, I can draw on the computer. I'd already started doing that with graphic design, but I'd never done it with really like a Wacom pen, you know, any sort of tablet experience to kind of replicate what I was doing, you know, in like the analog world. So I tried to take it on there and do it. And it was a lot of fun. But my first job out of college was a design job. My second job was a design job. But all the while I was illustrating on the side for fun, and started getting clients that way. And my job, my bosses started to recognize my ability. And so they would send certain projects my way that were more illustrative. And that's how I got my feet wet and then realized I could do it. And it was way fun. And yeah.
Gotcha.
There's more to that story, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into that. So when you get out of school, what do you end up doing right away?
So it's funny. My wife and I, I got married to my wife in college. And,
So you got married young.
I got married young. Yeah. And so I decided, I've been working my last semester. I'd been working remotely for doing like freelance work for this company called Column 5. I was hire number 15. They're huge now, and they have offices in California and New York. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was like real early on when they were still like in an attic.
Oh, wow.
it was funny because I've been doing these like at that time they were all infographics. They do more than that now, but they were all just when that infographic, you know, craze was happening. They recognized that I could do stuff with illustration a little bit, and I was a designer, so they wanted my help doing kind of data visualizations. So I was right after college. They never offered me a job. I actually just, my wife and I spent all of our graduation money we got from family and drove down from, we went to school in Idaho, and so we're full swing, we're coming back, I guess.
in
Rexburg, Idaho. And anyways, we drove down to California right after graduation, like a day after.
Sure.
Drove down to Column 5 and said, hey. And they're like, hey. And I was like, I've been doing work for you remotely. I really need a job. I couldn't, like, and I hadn't at that point found a job at all. Hadn't had one lined up. So I talked to them and said, hey, I need to have an interview. So I sat down with them. They were in, you know, board shorts and flip-flops or no shoes at all, the other guy, and just like sat up, you know, put their feet on the table, was really relaxed, and they're like, okay, we'll do this interview now. So they interview, and they're like, okay, we'll get back to you in a couple of weeks. So I was like, well, actually, I kind of need to know now. I don't have any money, and I just graduated. We spent it all driving down here. And he's like, okay. I was like, yeah, my wife's in the car right now. And he's like, oh, okay, well, go to the beach and hang out for like an hour and we'll get back to you. And I was like, cool, okay. So we just like walked the beach, you know, down in Newport Beach and waited for the call, and they called us up and had us come back in. They're like, well, you got the job. It paid absolutely nothing at that time, but we didn't really care. We were just happy to, you know, to move down to California and start working.
Well, absolutely nothing was still better than the literal nothing you were making before. So.
Exactly. That was what was going through my head too. And it was a cool place to work. So it was a fun startup at that point.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty ballsy move to make with that though. I mean, I don't know that that's something I would have done. I would have,
right.
I probably would have been shitting my pants, you know, going, what am I going to do? Do you think if I drove down there that they would, you know, see me? I would like overanalyze this situation entirely and probably never walk through the door. So kudos to you for having the guts to do that.
Well, yeah, it was funny because, I mean, they were super nice guys, but, and I talked to them about like, hey, I'm graduating soon. And they knew I was graduating, but it was just kind of one of those moments where it's like, let's just do it. Let's just go down there. Maybe that'll be a leg up on the competition, I guess, and help out for the interview if I just showed up. And so we did. And it was funny because they said, you know, like I said, like an hour later, I got the job. And so I ran back to the car. We both drove up to Idaho, picked up our stuff within the same week and brought it back down to California.
Wow.
And it all happened within, it all happened within a few days.
That's amazing. So you mentioned in that you had been doing work for them remotely. So you were doing stuff for them when you were in college too.
Yeah. They'd contacted me. I can't honestly remember what exactly the circumstance was. I'm pretty sure it was just, they reached out through Dribbble. Cause that's when I started Dribbble and I started putting up my online portfolio and started to do that. That really wasn't pushed in when I was in college.
It didn't exist when I was in college. So
yeah, I guess we have a little bit of an age gap, but still, I mean, it was at the point when I was in college, they weren't pushing it as a mandatory thing to have your website. And so I had done it just because I wanted one. I thought that'd be cool. More wanted it because it'd be cool than wanted it because I thought I needed it.
Sure.
And so I had it and I started posting everything online and through my blog and got on Dribbble early on. And that's where I got, contacted by them. It was on Dribbble. Early on Dribbble, I got a lot of stuff from Dribbble. I feel like not as much anymore. But yeah, at that time when it was early, I got a lot of work from that.
Yeah, I think Dribbble, I saw somebody post this up the other day on Twitter, but Dribbble was great if you got in early. They related it to Bitcoin. Yeah. It was great if you got in early, but if you came in late, you were screwed. And I was like, I didn't get into Dribbble until, 4 or 5 years ago. And it's not that Dribbble had been around that long before that, but it was just that 1 year difference was huge.
Yep. And I feel like, it still gets a lot of great exposure for me. Sure. So I like to see my, fellow creatives and follow up on what they're doing just to, cause it doesn't have to be a finished product. It's just mm-hmm. a work in progress type stuff. But yeah, I got job leads out of it more than I got, project.
Oh, okay.
And so they reached out and said, "Hey, do you want to be like a contractor type thing?" And so I've been doing that with them, doing infographics. No, I'd only taken one class on data design, and I was like, "Yeah, I totally know what this is all about." And yeah, I just guessed. It worked. Everybody was guessing. I guess that.
I mean,
time.
I feel like still with data design, you're still kind of guessing of what people want. So it's not. Yeah, I don't know.
There's a lot more pictures than data back then.
Yeah, because whenever I have to do anything infographic related, I'm pulling it out of my ass. I'm, here's a chart. How do I make it look not like a chart?
Exactly. I mean,
that's pretty much what it is.
Or how do I make this data sound? They always gave you a big brief. You got a page long brief.
Oh, that's better than I usually get. So.
Oh, yeah. So I got a page brief and it just gave me like a bunch of information. Then I kind of had to go through and decipher, what it meant and then pick out certain things and be like, this would be fun for, this is your main data point right here. Everything else kind of hinges on this. Once I found that one, then it made it a lot easier. But yeah, it was a interesting time. I don't know where they're going. Like, it seems like they've slowed down quite a bit on like the infographic world, not column five.
But sure.
Yeah. It's I don't know where those went.
I think people kind of realized they were flashy. They weren't necessarily important.
There's a lot of information on one of those infographics. I remember how many, like 30 data points. And I was like, who is reading these about everything, about how to make a taco or whatever? It was just ridiculous.
I always enjoyed the ones that were just, like you said, how to make a taco. Those ones I found entertaining because I knew they were just done to be entertaining. It was the ones that where you're trying to take actual information and turn it into something that stressed me out.
That's exactly right. Well, to put in a good word for column five, they're doing amazing things now. They've adjusted with how everything's working. Not that they weren't then, it fit for what the time was, but now, man, they're doing some really amazing things with just how to visualize data in lots of different ways. And it's I think they're doing better work than they've ever done.
Gotcha. So you get out of college, you hit them up basically and peer pressure / guilt trip them into giving you an interview and hiring you in the same day, which I am very impressed by.
Thanks.
And how long did you stay there?
Well, at Column 5, I was just over a year. Okay. We literally couldn't afford it.
Sure.
And you know, they were a startup, and I know, you know, I couldn't ask for a whole lot more than I was getting, but we just had a kid. We had our little boy, who's 5 now, but yeah, we had him, and he was, a little more expensive than I had thought, and we expected, and we were kind of looking for options there to leave. I loved working there, but then I got a call from Arnold Worldwide. They're an ad agency in Boston.
Okay.
And they wanted to kind of build up their in-house design team. They didn't really have them. They kind of fired everybody a little while back and just worked with all contractors. And that was kind of the thing that they wanted to do, just not have any in-house design. And then they hired me to start it back up again. And they offered quite a bit compared to what I was seeing. Sure. And so, because it was, ad world and had a lot more money. So I was like, all right, I'll take that job. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I said yes, because we needed the money, and moved and drove to Boston.
So where in California were you before that? You were Southern California?
Newport Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, we were in Newport Beach.
So you literally went completely cross country, not only from, coasts, but from south to north as well.
Yeah, it was a long drive.
how much of a culture shock was that for you?
It was huge. It felt like I was going to a different country, because all my time was on the West Coast, is at least in the Northwest.
Sure.
And so so when we moved to Boston, it was hard getting used to the directness of people. they're direct. I'll say that's a kind way of saying it, right?
Yeah, that's a polite
their directness,
way to put it.
and they're just overall, it was a little bit harder to get used to. Just their focuses were different than mine. Ultimately why we moved to Austin. Sure. After that. But it was a huge move, and especially going from a small startup on the beach in Newport Beach. Like, literally, we just went to lunch across the street and went to the beach. And to Boston, where it was work on the weekends, and I was in a huge company with these massive accounts. It was the complete opposite lifestyle and work and everything that I'd been accustomed to. And so it was a fun experience, but it ran its course in a year or two.
Gotcha.
Everything just goes a year. I can handle anything for a year.
Well, agencies are tough, because you're driven by the client's deadlines the entire time. Plus, mm-hmm. There's multiple clients, so they're stacking deadlines on top of you. And it's just, for me, when I was in the agency world, I'm glad I did it when I was a lot younger, because it really does take a toll on you of those hours that you work. I mean, I realize not all agencies are like that. Some are structured a lot better, where they actually are more organized, and they're, not making people stay there until 3 a.m. to get a project out and then be back at 6 a.m. to start on the next thing. But
yeah, I've done.
Yeah, it's tough. So when you leave the agency in Boston, what do you end up doing?
So we actually left to start Brave the Woods.
Oh, really?
Our current design and illustrations. I should probably call it the illustration and design studio, because pretty, like I said, we do way more illustration, but yeah, our studio, we decided to do our own thing, because we weren't able to spend too much time as a family, and it was a little bit harder getting used to the culture. Sure. In both, the East Coast and in the ad world. So yeah, we built up enough clientele and decided to make the leap. And so we came to Austin, Texas, just because my wife said, if we ever move anywhere, she wants to move to Austin, Texas. She said, if we ever move anywhere just to start our business, if we wasn't job related, we could just start our own thing. She's like, I want to go to Austin. I was like, cool. Never been there, but let's do it.
So had she been there at that point?
She'd been there once.
Okay. So yeah.
She was there for a weekend.
Town in Texas.
Yeah.
Based on one visit that she kind of liked and the vibe that she got from just seeing people around talk about it online.
pretty much she saw it. It was funny because the time she went to was just like probably three days. Oh, and wow. It was for Halloween.
Oh, wow.
it was a journalism conference that she went to, and it was right during Halloween. And, but yeah, she just fell in love with the city and all the, you know, the live music, the real creative atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It was a really green, lush town. And I was like, Texas, are you sure? Because I'd never been to Texas. I was like, I don't know if it's that green. And I was expecting, you know, tumbleweeds going through the streets.
Yeah,
and,
but Austin is its own thing amongst
it
Texas.
It is. In lots of different ways, it's its own thing. But yeah, it was very lush and green and beautiful. And yeah, so I took one weekend trip there with her to find out if we wanted to do it, and then we did.
Pulled the trigger and all.
Yeah.
So. Gotcha.
Figured it couldn't hurt. It was cheaper to live. Yeah. There. Boston is outrageous.
So you're working this in before you move to Austin, before you go out and start Brave the Woods. You're working all this time, plus you're doing freelance stuff on the side. How are you in that process? Like finding clients, balancing actually getting work done, especially when you're at the agency and your hours are all over the place just to meet up with their deadlines. How are you doing?
Well, it's super simple. You just don't sleep ever.
Oh, I'm like, not good at that part.
Yeah. No, I'm a night owl anyways. I, you know, if there was an option for life to go on without sleeping, mm-hmm. I think I would take that in a heartbeat. But I just feel like it's a waste of time. But yeah, anyway, that was fine for me to stay up late. It was just hard with the family, so we couldn't keep doing, you know, both. But I'd stay up all night and record classes for. I do Skillshare classes. That's actually the way we were able to get out so fast and do our own thing because of the money we earned from that.
Sure.
But yeah, I got a lot of clients that reached out to us. Like I said, we were really proactive. On Dribbble, I started a blog that I kept up, and I interviewed people, the people I considered to be famous, and they are in our world, you know, in our creative world, like Ty Mattson, mm-hmm. you know, and DKNG, like really, really fun people, really talented people. And I got to interview them, and I told them, you know, like, hey, all my followers want to like hear from you, and they'd love to hear this interview. So I shot them over a bunch of interview questions. They answered them, and they're all just my questions, and I really didn't have any followers. If they're listening right now, sorry. It was really really influential in my development. But yeah, I was like, I totally have all these followers. Or, you know, I didn't tell how many, but I was like, I have people that want to hear this. And basically, it was just me wondering, you know, if I could connect with them. But after doing that,
yeah, I started a whole podcast around that premise. I, you know.
Exactly. So you know what I mean? But yeah, so doing things like that, I was really proactive. And then people just reached out to us, and we just kept getting clients because people kept emailing us, and we realized it was something that we could actually do.
Sure. So let's touch on Skillshare a little bit, because it seems like you kind of got in pretty early on with that as well when it was just starting to take off, and that helped kind of give you some name recognition and boost things. Did that end up helping the business side of things for you as well?
Yeah, it, so I'd actually declined that email that they'd sent to me like several times. They asked me several times because it was a lot of different people asking, you know, for me to do at, because it was like Udemy and a bunch of other ones that were coming out, like tons of other ones that were starting up at the same time. And, but they had talked about making, different classes and focuses that you could go into. Like they would have the design class, mm-hmm. and you could have this, and you have all the, so I liked that they were sectioning it out and you could really focus on that. And they said I would be like pretty much the first in the design category. So I was like, well, you know, if I know anything, it's, you just gotta be, you'd be first, especially with social media stuff. If you can get in early, like we talked about earlier with Dribbble, it's like, if I can get in early, like there's a chance that it would explode. It's really good for me. And, that was probably the best decision I made early on, was to just make a class. And I made a, learn the ins and outs of Illustrator. So it was just a little basic course on how to use Illustrator for someone who's never touched the program. Mm-hmm. And to make art, you know, and it exploded, and they were pushing it all, because I was like the only, like one of the only ones in there, so they were pushing it, doing promotions and advertising for me and really making a big deal out of it because they wanted it to be like the program to be successful. And yeah, we made a lot of money off of that. And that really, we just put it all in savings. And we wanted, we said if we were going to move to Texas and do our own thing, we'd have to have like a half a year's worth of, you know, savings,
sure,
like worth of earnings, you know, in our savings just in case as a fallback. And yeah, we made like a year's worth, I mean, like within a few months.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a different system now. I think they caught on. They're like, whoa, we're giving you 75% of the sale. And back then it was $20 a person instead of like their Netflix type model where you, it's like $8.99 or $8 a month. Mm. But yeah, so it was $20 a person. And I don't know, we had a lot of students come in. So it was just further help for us to make that, you know, kind of push us into that decision where it's like, okay, well, at least we have a little bit of a buffer, and that's, you know, I won't always be there, but it's enough to give us, you know, I don't know, the chance to jump and see what would happen. And it worked out.
How many classes have you done for Skillshare at this point?
Oh, I'm like eight or okay, something, like 8 or 9. I haven't done a lot. If you look on, a lot of people have done a lot more. I just had my early one. It has like 23,000 students in it or something. And so a lot of those early ones have kind of carried me through. And I just released another one. That's the how to make a vintage postcard of your favorite city.
I saw that.
Yeah. And so that one came out.
It's in my queue of ones that I probably will never get to because I'm so sure, bad at getting to all these things. But it is in my queue.
Oh, well, that makes you feel better. Well, it's you're interested. Yes. Yeah, it's time. It's a little bit time consuming to make the actual thing, but it's nice on those because that's what I loved about Skillshare in the first place was the fact that I could interact with my students, but also that you taught by it. So when I was in college, we went through Lynda videos, lynda.com yeah, videos, and those are great for just the technical, literally walking you through every single tool and how to use it. What was hard for me was focusing and finding a real life application for that tool. I mean, they showed you on a really quick example, but it wasn't something that I would ever do. So I like that it was project based and you can create something and say, hey, here's this awesome project, like this postcard. Like I was like, I loved making this postcard. Let me just walk you through all the tools and how to make it. So you're learning something, but you're also making something awesome. Mm-hmm. And you can now know that I have all these tools, but I also know like what I could potentially use it for. At least one thing, you know, you can at least make a postcard out of it, you know, go, and you can expand from there. But I like that part of Skillshare.
Yeah. I enjoy the classes that I take on there, especially the ones that are done well. There's been a few stinkers, yeah, but most of them have been done really well.
Yeah, there are some really good classes on there.
Gotcha. So you've built up this nest egg. You dig up roots and you move to Austin. And how do you start picking up more clients and finding more sustaining work than just Skillshare?
Well, I hate this because I'm like, it just happened. People just emailed us and that helps nobody. But we did.
But it just happened, you know, and people just started emailing.
But it kind of what happened. Like, my guess though is with Skillshare, my name got around. Obviously, there's, you know, 20. I think it's like around 30,000 followers, not counting all the different. That's on Skillshare, not counting all like the 20,000
social media
in one class, the 9,000 in another class. Yeah. So there's a lot of people that all of a sudden heard my name and seen my work and passed it around. So I attribute a lot of it to that, but also I was, like I said, I was super active on social media promoting my own work. Mm-hmm. And I did reach out every once in a while. I would reach out to a company that I really wanted to work with. I kind of went through the process of not really like cold calling them. I would just kind of creepily follow them on social media for a little while. And then I'd find out like who had a position where, and then I start following them and start commenting a little bit more and more. And then finally they're like, I'm on their radar and they're like, oh, hey, I thanks for liking this. I've seen your work a lot. Do you want to work on this project? I'm like, sure. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we have the time to do
it. So you politely cyber stalked and inserted yourselves in conversations too. That's to get
exactly
noticed.
I commented, and yeah, you just got to throw your name in there a few times. And no, that it was funny because like we got some big clients. I remember we got Target for the first time. That was like a huge deal for us because we really, really wanted to work with Target. We started, it was kind of like the, you know, you're going fishing and you want to get a bigger fish. So you throw in the smaller fish and catch another bigger one. Then you catch that one and throw it back out there and get a bigger fish. And that's kind of how our clientele grew. It was just, and I think our talent grew. I'd hope to say I got more talented over time and it started looking better and better. And, you know, then it was by that point, your name's out there and it's word of mouth. And I'm getting a lot of referrals from my, you know, current clients. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I hate saying that because I don't know. I people want to hear like, how do I get more clients? I'm just like, well, you just, you know, wait and the email comes to you and then you're good.
Most people that doesn't happen for. So that's why yeah, I do ask the questions, because most people, that's not how it happens. It's, you know,
sure.
And I mean, you busted your ass to get the recognition that is bringing in that work too. So it's not like, you know.
So that's the secret. That's the secret. You just have to keep pushing your name out there and make sure. Because if your name isn't on, like, the thing I noticed too is if I would hit up somebody, like an old client, I would be, you know, I really needed money this month and, you know, we're a little bit low. So I'd be like, I go to an old client and say, you know, hey, just want to see, I hope things are going well. You know, I really love that last project. Thanks so much again for, you know, for working with us. If you ever need anything in the future, just let me know, but I hope all's well. That's all I send. Mm-hmm. I get a couple days later, I get a response and they're just like, hey, that was fantastic working with you. You know, we actually have another project we're thinking about taking on. And it looks like it would be perfect for you. And I was like, oh, really? You know, and that type of thing, just it's really just who they there's so many creatives that they could choose from. Sure. It's just who's in the top of their mind at that moment. So if you're constantly reaching out to existing clients or to new people and just throwing your name out there, you don't have to beg for work. You just put your name in there. They can look up your work. They know about a lot of those clients, you know, your clients already, they already know what your work looks like. So, that I did a lot of that. But I never, I don't know that that's, I think I'll attribute a lot to that.
Okay.
So if you need a takeaway from this, there you go.
Sure. While you're in the process of this, how are you refining your style and kind of making improvements, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, to help push yourself along?
You know, I worry about this one. Like, gives me anxiety because I'm always, you know, those people that you've followed on Dribbble. Sure. And they're following a trend, right? They have like this style and you're like, oh man, that's kind of a cool thing. It's like really hip at the moment. Everybody's like wanting that style or that effect. And then couple years later, you're like, whatever happened to that guy? Like, whatever happened to that designer? You're like, I have no idea. He's like, he or she isn't kind of relevant anymore. And it's because they stuck with the same thing. So I was always terrified of kind of just getting stagnant and standing still. So I always experiment and play with styles, and it might hurt me because, you know, kind of the jack of all trades thing, but in my experience, it's been really fun for me because like the more I practice other styles and experiment, the more I kind of find what things are really, you know, true to Brad Woodard. Like, I'll be drawing something like, man, I tried to draw something 70 different ways in 70 different styles. And I keep looking at the eyes and I'm like, man, the eyes look exactly the same. Like almost every single one of them. I'm like, okay, I guess those are my eyes. Like that's how I draw eyes, you know?
Sure.
Or whatever. So I try to do these little experiments and to test myself and then find out like what keeps coming back. And so I do have a bunch of different styles that I actually use and people choose from on my portfolio. But a lot of them come back to this very, very same little details that I like and I just work on those. But
okay. Yeah. Well, as you're growing things, you eventually hooked up with my buddy Dustin. To start doing brushes for Retro Supply. How did that come about?
He reached out to me.
Really?
He said he was super, super cool. That was when I was in Boston, actually. He reached out. He'd taken my class on Skillshare, believe it or not. And he was like, man, I really liked your class. I liked how you taught it. I love your work. And I'd love to try to collaborate in some way, you know, at some point. And we ended up... coming up with the idea of doing a brushes, because we were talking about why we liked Skillshare, and it was project based, and you had, like I just mentioned, you have a reason to use the tools. Mm-hmm. You know what you can use them for. Same thing with brushes. I was like, I love brushes and digital brush sets that are out there. I just get them and I have 60 brushes that I purchased for $20, and I have no idea how to use any of them. I just don't even know where to start. So when we sold our brushes, they were a smaller set and they had a project assigned to them. So I said, let's just theme it and say, like, these are brushes for, like, these are space, like the Space Ranger sure. brush set that I have, you know, that I was like, let's go for like kind of like that 60s sci-fi vibe. And I really liked, like, maybe let's find that. So we actually picked the theme first and then picked brushes that would actually make that possible.
Oh, okay.
So we found made a mood board of all the art that we really liked. And we're like, okay, how do we achieve this effect? And then I would tell him, and he's amazing at, you know, creating that those kind of tools. And so he went in and made the brush and I tested it out. And same thing with Woodland Wonderland series. We did it was like, we just all inspired by Golden Books. And I was like, I really want to do Golden Books type of art. And he was
I feel like that's a prerequisite to getting into design and illustration, is that has to be a huge influence in your childhood.
It does. And that's why I was like, I want to try to just like mimic it, just to learn from it. And so it was kind of selfish, but like both of them were just things that I wanted to try out. And so he made me brushes to do it. And then we sold them. So it was pretty cool. It was a fun process. He's super talented, and it's really nice because they have a tutorial attached to them. You have a project that you are something, you know, you can build with these. Like, oh, if I want to do something 60s themed, I hear people all the time email us like, oh, like, when can I get these brushes? I have this project coming up and it's 60s space something. And I was like, that's not all the brushes are good for, but it's pretty neat that people are finding a reason to use them immediately, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think people also, it's kind of like you were saying with, you know, you've got 60 brushes and you weren't sure what to do yep. with any of them. I think people get in the habit of, they've used these brushes for this thing, and going yeah. outside of that sort of look for what they're wanting to do with it can be a little overwhelming. And they don't think that maybe that because they've used it for that thing, they can push it outside that boundary.
Yeah, no, it's true. I like the brush sets, 'cause I got a chance to, we did some, webinars, mm-hmm. work, like a working webinar, and kind of show people, like, I was live drawing with the brushes and kind of answering questions. And that was a lot of fun too, but it's given us an opportunity to like really talk about like how to use the brushes and play off, you know, my style. And I got to experiment. So it was a good time.
Yeah. I got a bone to pick with you guys about those webinars. You keep having them at times where I'm actually at work, and it makes it really hard to justify getting in there and paying attention.
Yeah, it's hard. I always wondered about that. Like, luckily he records everything, yeah, so you can. But it's not as, you're right, it's not the same as being interacting with it live.
I always enjoy being in those things and being a smartass in the chat box,
making me sweat.
Yep. That's my strong suit.
Oh, no, let's just not answer that question. Yeah. I don't know that we're gonna block you.
That's my strong suit, is being a smartass off what somebody else says. It's not necessarily coming up with it on my own. It's when somebody else says something, I can make a response to it. I'm trying to figure out how to monetize that.
You're kind of doing it, right? You can do it right now.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit, yeah. Podcast money is not going to pay the bills all that much, though.
Not quite the same.
No. Yeah. If I want to live off, you know, like $2,000 a year, sure.
This is a passion project for you.
Very much so. Very much so. So, you know, you recently moved to Boise, Idaho. When you picked up and moved up there, was there any concern for the business side of things? Because I realize Boise is a fairly sizable town and all, but you're going from a place that's got a big tech community. It's got a big, there's big retail centers there. There's all this stuff. Plus it's the capital of Texas.
Yep.
You know, big college scene. So you've got South by Southwest that comes through there. All of this yep. arts and culture that kind of converges across the country into this one spot. And then you up and move to Boise, Idaho, which is
not the first place that people think of for that sort of thing when they move there. Now, I've never been to Boise. It may be much more culturally sophisticated than I'm aware of.
Oh, we're super advanced here. No, I'm just kidding. It is a capital city. Sure.
That's all I know. That's literally all I know about Boise. Is it's the capital of Idaho.
No, our decision to move here was really, it was for family. We have a lot of family around the Northwest, and so, but and we miss the mountains. But I was nervous a little bit because I wasn't sure. You know, most of our clients aren't local anyways. Sure. But you never know how much being in that area has, like, I guess I just never looked back and thought, like, you know, how many jobs did I get from, like, just meeting up with people at events? Because there's events all the time with the AIGA and other events that, you know, Armin and Brioni Vitt put on.
Of course, they've known
from they moved to a smaller town than us. So, and it was funny because he actually influenced us to move because he'd been talking about how much, like, you know, he was reducing overhead and just wanted a new experience. And so we kind of had done the same. We were kind of like, oh, man, that's kind of really smart. You know, we'd been hit with the presidential race and nobody's spending money on art.
Sure.
And I remember that year was really hard for us. And so we were kind of, that was when we started to think about maybe moving out. But yeah, it was initially a thought, like, are we going to be able to continue, you know, keeping up with clients and stuff? But as soon as we moved here, there is actually a lot going on here. And it's just not as much like it's not a creative hub that you would think. But there is, like, money in a lot of these businesses here and some major tech companies. And so we've actually, right when we got here, we picked up a few jobs with some of the bigger companies here in Boise. So that worked out really well. We had a few friend connections here that introduced us to some people. But yeah, we're really, really missing the creative community that is there in Austin. That's just, you just can't beat that. And so our next goal is to create something big, like a conference series that we're going to bring in other people from all over the country, hopefully other creatives, and hold something
podcasters
here in Boise. And hey, you want to come on down to Boise?
I would love to.
Oh, perfect.
I'm very cheap.
But yeah, that's what we got an extra room in the house. Come on over.
You know, you buy me a plane ticket, I'm all there. I don't mind sleeping.
Show you all the sights of Boise.
So, yeah,
exactly.
We're kind of getting close to our time, but what kind of exciting are you looking forward to and do you have coming up in the near future that you're allowed to talk about?
That I'm allowed to talk about. Well, we do have some more. Well, we have some fun classes coming up in Skillshare that I'm trying to, that's one of my New Year's resolutions, is to get better at teaching more on Skillshare. But also I want to do a lot more free, like short, like 5-10 minute videos that I want to start putting out with just tutorial type things that I want to put out frequently. And we have Artists for Education. We didn't really touch on God. That.
And, okay, so we got to back up and we got to talk about that. I completely forgot about that.
Okay.
And the sad part is, like, no, now that I looked down at my notes, I actually have that written down.
No, that's totally fine. It's we've kind of put it on not pause. I mean, it's still running.
Well, you did move, you know, like a couple thousand miles north. So
the move would kind of push things off a little bit. But so it's kind of self-sustaining at the moment. We do have a few more posters that some amazing artists have contributed that we're going to be putting up soon. But we're hoping to make some just slight adjustments to the model to help make this more like effective for our overall goal of like helping teachers in the classrooms. Sure. Right now they can download it. So for those who don't know what
I was about to say, for those who don't know, why don't you tell me?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Artists for Education was something that my wife and I started because we have some teachers in the family who talk to us a lot about, you know, just how little they have in terms of supplies and visuals and things for their classes and schools. So we thought, you know, why don't we have all these talented artist friends of ours, and why don't we kind of get them all together and invite them to create you know, posters that that are educational posters for all the different subjects that teachers can go online and download and print off and put up in their classrooms. But more importantly, like the biggest goal was we wanted to be able to donate these posters to schools directly so they didn't have to go through the printing process mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And so that's why we're making the transition now is we're trying to find ways to increase our sales so that we can put that money into donating directly to the schools instead of just having them download it. But the artists that we're calling out is like a really select set of artists that we're pulling, just the very best that we can find. And they're creating these posters with the help of the teachers. Teachers are bringing in ideas of what they want to have visualized and represented. So we'll be for anywhere from like math teachers to geology to music. And so we're making all these different posters for them. And we have an expert in the field for each subject so that we get everything verified and correct. Cause that's been the hardest thing is making sure the content is correct and appropriate for the right ages. And so it's a lot of work, but you can go to artistforeducation.com and see what we've have up to this point. And there's a little bio of each artist next to each poster, and you can see more of their stuff, and they get a percentage of all the sales too. So I would encourage anybody who's listening to go check it out and support it. And soon we'll be making some tweaks to make it even more enjoyable for people to buy and make it easier for them to donate directly to teachers.
Cool. Well, I know. So my wife and I homeschool our kids, and we've been talking about grabbing some of them to put up to help teach them. So we
awesome.
Now we just got to decide which one we want or which ones.
It's hard. There's so many good ones. Yeah. I know, and so many good ones even in the same subject, which makes it even trickier. Because
I don't want to be that guy who goes in and just downloads everything. And,
exactly.
I mean, I do want to be that guy that does that, but I do want to pay exactly. for stuff too and give back.
So. Well, we'll make it easier for you. That's what we're doing right now. We're making it easier. But please look at the artists there and recognize that, you know, the artists who have contributed, they put in a ton of time on those posters, and they are beyond beautiful, functional for the classroom. Also amazing for, like you said, for your own home, and some of them even for your living room, I would mm-hmm. say. Just beautiful pieces of art. But they put in a lot of time and effort into these just, you know, because they wanted to, you know, help out educators. And so we've been blessed to work with all these awesome people. And we're hoping to ramp it up this year. That's another one of our goals, get AFE rolling.
That's awesome. That's a cool project, because I've got a bunch of friends who are teachers and stuff, and I've definitely been making an effort to like point them towards that stuff, because they talk about resources that don't look like they came out of the teacher supply store, where everything looks the same and it's a bad version of Comic Sans, which
exactly
I feel like school stuff is the only place that Comic Sans may be somewhat appropriate.
Not going to get as much judgmental looks using it.
If you're using it for a 5-year-old, I'm fine with that. I really am.
Exactly.
If you're using it for the 45-year-old in accounting, that it doesn't really make sense.
So there's an age window.
Age and profession.
Comic Sans. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Definitely profession.
So, it was like I saw somebody posted up something. Oh, it's a buddy of mine. Posted up something, and it was an architect's business card, and it was done in Comic Sans. And I just never.
That's not going to be a sturdy building.
I'm never going to trust that guy. I mean, even if
he please tell used, me which buildings he made.
Even if he'd used that generic architecture font, I would have been better that than him using Comic Sans for that.
Come on, use a Futura or something.
Yeah, something that feels sturdy, something that feels
built. Exactly.
Not something that feels.
Tell me which buildings they built, and I'll avoid them.
Not something that feels like I could have done it with a crayon.
Exactly. Right.
Cool. So what else? What else do you have coming down the pike?
Man, I'm trying to think. We just have a lot of big. I mean, so I guess this is a hobby, but it's going into bleeding into what we do every day. I'm trying to get into woodworking a little bit more, which is. So woodworking and mostly wood carving, which I was, you can on our Instagram, you could see some of the carvings that we've done. Been trying to get into that, but yeah, it's been fun trying to get into a different medium that takes me away from being hunched over in my office, you know, near my computer.
Now you get to hunch over something else.
I get a hunch over a workbench in a freezing garage. There you go. But what's neat about it, I was realizing, is it's just a fun, it's neat to see something tangible immediately. Mm-hmm. Like right when I make it, you know, I'd make so much stuff for, you know, on the computer, and then it goes off either on like social sites or it goes onto a website, and or even if it's printed, a lot of times I just don't ever see it. And so it's fun to be done with a project and then be able to feel it, like hold it and be like, hey, I did this. I made it. I finished all that time and effort. You can see it. If you were to like grab it, you could see that there was time and all the hours you put into it. So that's been kind of neat for something I've been working on, and I'll be doing a lot more of that this year. Yeah, artists for education. And then I guess the last thing we're trying to do here, like I said, we're trying to make a series that we're working on, speaker series that's going to be being announced here pretty soon for Boise. Very so cool. Anybody listening local here, maybe reach out to me. Any local creatives. I know there's a lot of them. I know there's a bunch out here, but I just, you know, they just don't organize too well. So
if you live in Boise, find Brad.
Yeah, you can. Exactly. Reach out to me. We need to meet. So
cool.
But yeah.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. Where can people find you online?
Yeah. So they can go to bravethewoods.com. And for Artists for Education, you go to artistforeducation.com. So
awesome. And yeah, we'll link to all that stuff in the show notes and put links to all your social stuff as well. Try to dig up a Skillshare class to link to as well.
Oh, yeah. That one's harder. You can look me up on Skillshare, but the link's a little obscure. So
I've got a Skillshare promo code that I can link directly to yours on. So I'll do that.
Oh, perfect. Thanks. That may be a huge help instead of saying the HQ something backslash.
No, yep. I can put that directly in there and they just have to click.
Cool. Awesome.
So I think I can actually. Yeah, we'll talk about that off air. That's boring. That's boring stuff that the listeners don't want to hear. Well, Brad.
Please tell me I will.
Well, Brad, thank you again so much for chatting with me tonight. And go out and hug some necks.
Awesome. Thank you. Will do. All right.
Brave_the_woods. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, over at creativesouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram.
Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code PrinceSouth18 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today.
For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.